The Jaguars take out their AFC title game frustrations on the Patriots. Kirk Cousins shows why he's worth the big money. Why it's time for the Browns to move on to Baker Mayfield. Plus Case Keenum, more Fitzmagic. That Cowboys D delivers. We're breaking down week two on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling here with Andy Benoit. We are ready to talk some Week 2 football here. A couple of headliner Super Bowl contenders going at it, and really just a week of kicker heartbreak.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's just mention the kicker thing real quick, get it out of the way, and then we can get on to talking actual football. I can't stand...
Don't you want to talk plant legs and that sort of thing, Andy?
I wish they didn't move that extra point back. I hate that some touchdowns are 6 and some are 7, and what decides it was the guy that really isn't a football player. I hate that. I get that it's better TV.
I don't think it's better enough TV. I still don't pay attention to the extra points. I'll look elsewhere, and if there's some sort of commotion, I'll look back. Oh, we missed the extra point. Okay. That's it. I could imagine what it looked like anyway.
I get so into watching the down and distance and personnel groupings on the field, I'll go for a quarter and a half without knowing I watched the Browns Saints today and didn't notice the extra point missed until I thought, wait a minute, how'd they get to 12? And it was about halftime, I think, is when I thought that. I wish the touchdowns were an automatic 7. Touchdowns need to be worth double and plus one of what a field goal's worth so that you can't – yes, correct, yeah. It needs to be. It's a mathematical thing. Otherwise, you incentivize field goals too much. If you make a field goal half a touchdown,
I agree. I think they're not doing extra points in the spring league, the Alliance of American Football. But
I'm on their email list, and it's starting to drive me crazy. That Alliance of American Football.
We'll have to break it all down when it comes up next offseason. But let's jump into week two here. We're going to start with the Jaguars over the Patriots. I'm not going to say it's a seismic shift in the AFC. There's nothing seismic shifting that happens in September. This was one that the Jaguars wanted, though. I mean, it stuck in their craw the way they feel like they got less aggressive back in January and let that one get away from them in Foxborough. So this seemed to mean a little bit more to them, and they went out and got it. And you could sort of see in this game, Blake Bortles had two or three runs, scrambles in the fourth quarter where, it was sort of a third and medium type of situation, and he was lowering his head. He was going helmet first into guys to try and get the first down. They played this like they wanted it very badly, and they really soundly outplayed the Patriots in this.
There's this idea that when you quote-unquote hide your quarterback, I think what we envision is quarterbacks handing it off a bunch. We hope that the handoffs produce such good runs that he really doesn't have to throw very much. And if he does throw, maybe we call a screen pass, and we're going to get by that way. And the reality is, in the NFL, nobody's good enough to run the ball that way. It just doesn't work in Jacksonville, especially with Leonard Fournette out. So really, when it comes to hiding your QB, and that's too harsh of a term, it's game managing, playing around your QB. You've got to throw the ball with him on early downs. You can't just go in and hope the quarterback doesn't throw. The last team that did that was Jacksonville week 5 last year, and we'd never seen it in the previous years before, and it usually doesn't turn into a win. That's when they beat the Steelers with all those turnovers. But usually you've got to hide your QB by giving him easy throws on easy downs against predictable looks. And Gary, nobody has done that over the last, it's dating back to last year, let's say over the last 6 to 8 games. No one's done that better than the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I mean, and look, Blake Bortles threw it 45 times in this game. They ran it, including some of the Bortles scrambles, 24 rushing attempts. They were constantly in third and medium and third and short. Their playbook was open. They had options. And look, they had playmakers making plays in this. Dede Westbrook had a long catch-and-run touchdown. Keelan Cole had probably the play of the day with the Odell Beckham catch. They pretty much picked apart the Patriots for most of this one. They had a couple sloppy turnovers in the second half. One tipped interception off of Sferian Jenkins' hands, and one DJ Chark got it ripped away from him after a catch. But they were pretty much in control of this one. And obviously a big part of that, not just what they do offensively, the defense was outstanding again. They took Gronkowski out of the game, a lot of Tashaun Gibson with a little bit of help. And the Patriots just don't really have the playmakers outside of Gronkowski at this point.
Yeah, that's what gets lost. New England's wide receiving core, if this weren't the Patriots, we would be talking about how amazingly bad the receiving core is. And I don't mean that disrespectfully of Chris Hogan, and Philip Dorsett has actually been a little better this year than he was in past years. But those are not your number one and number two receiving core. Cordarrelle Patterson, it's not an NFL-quality receiving core. Julian Edelman's absence is a big deal. He's going to really change that offense when he gets back. But for now, they've got to play around that, and it's hard to play around that when you're facing the AFC's fastest and best defense.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was the only other notes I'll give you on this one is it was a hot one. Seemed to be in triple digits on the field on those thermometers they have down there. And the other thing is, look, like we said, nothing's decided in September. However, Jaguars figure to be right there challenging the Patriots for that top seed in the AFC. And this is a game and a half lead now for the Jaguars if we're talking about home field in January. So a nice win, obviously one they really wanted to have and one they certainly earned on Sunday. Let's go Vikings Packers, another tie. Everyone loves a tie. Nobody likes a tie.
I can understand why people hate ties, but you know what? The whole point of playing the game is at the end, we want an outcome that represents how the game was played. And almost always, one team was better enough than the other that they get the win or the loss. Sometimes a game was so even, both teams got nothing. And if that's what's representative of the game over the big course of the season, I can live with that. That's what technically is most fair for the standings. I understand why people would hate it, though, and that it's an itch that doesn't get scratched.
Yes, it's that half game sitting out there. You got to tie again. You got to have two ties if you're going to tie once. Look, the Packers held a two-possession lead for the majority of the fourth quarter. This was when you're talking about, is Kirk Cousins worth the $84 million guaranteed over 3 years? This is the kind of game that they needed Kirk Cousins to make a ton of plays. And Kirk Cousins, sometimes you get bad Kirk Cousins. Sometimes he forces throws. Sometimes he turns it over. This was good Kirk Cousins. He put a couple balls out there that looked like they were in danger, and they ended up getting through. And he brought them back in this one. They needed a couple touchdowns. They needed a two-point conversion. Cousins got all of that. And on top of that, he put him in position for two field goals in overtime, including a 35-yarder as overtime expired, and the rookie kicker Daniel Carlson just had one of those days, missed both of them.
Cousins, for all his faults, and he doesn't have a ton of them, but they're distinct faults, and they've led to turnovers over the years, and that's why he's a little bit polarizing. He has incredible toughness in the pocket, and some of these negative plays stem from him taking that toughness a tad too far at times. The plus side, though, is you've got a guy who's equipped to make plays like this late in the fourth quarter. I remember that Seattle-Washington game last year where the Redskins had all backup offensive linemen in and went up to Seattle and won with Cousins making two incredible throws deep downfield. You saw a little bit of that in this game. That touchdown to Adam Thielen, that tied it up. It set up the Diggs two-point fade. Mm-hmm. As perfect as ball placement can get. That's as big time as it gets, I think.
He was getting crushed on that, too. I mean, that was something.
That's like an all-time type of play. I mean, that's superstar type of stuff.
It was one of those things, especially from the broadcast angle. It's like, oh, my goodness, that ball's going to get picked. No, it fit right in there, and then Thielen made the play on it. So, yeah, that play was unbelievable.
Should we be worried about Green Bay? Last week we got all excited because they're secondary. They've drafted these young guys, these corners, Jaire Alexander, Kevin King's in his second year, Josh Jackson, who can match up to tight ends, it looks like at times, a bigger guy. And they stop the Bears, and a man-to-man, they can blitz now. It's a Mike Pettine defense, and then here they are getting torched when they face two of the league's better route runners, at least, in Diggs and Thielen. But those guys had their way with these Packer DBs today.
I wouldn't say I'm worried about it. They're still a whole lot better than they were a year ago. And they played well for basically three quarters in this game. You know, it got dicey in the fourth quarter. I think they just faced a couple of superior receivers who made a lot of plays and a quarterback who got hot. I don't think it's problematic, and especially if you are, you know, putting them on a trajectory where they're going to improve as the year goes on. I think the Packers have something in that secondary. I think they're going to be really good. And I think when we're talking about this in December and January, I think we're going to be talking about them as a reason why the Packers are once again Super Bowl contenders here.
One other thing to keep in mind, Kyle Rudolph today, 7 catches, 72 yards. When John DeFilippo was the offensive coordinator in Cleveland, that was the year that Gary Barnidge, remember clunky
yeah.
running Gary Barnidge,
yep.
came out of nowhere and had, I can't remember how many yards he is, top 10 for tight ends for sure. That way he did that under DeFilippo. DeFilippo does a nice job by design of using his tight ends, both getting them the ball and then using what the tight end means to creating opportunities for other people. And I asked him once what his favorite formation was, and he said a 3-by-1 formation. And then I said, what's your second favorite formation? And he said a 1-by-3. And I said, ah, ha, ha, you know, hey, yeah, that's a nice way to say you love the 3-by-1. And he got very serious and said, no, a 1-by-3 is different to us. A 1-by-3 means the tight end's by himself on the backside. And I've always remembered that about him. He's borderline sensitive about loving those tight end formations on the 1-by-3s. We call him, what do we call on the show, Gary? Because we talk about it a lot. It's that Adam Gase Miami Dolphins formation. I always just say speed trips. That's what I say. That's the Sean McVay lexicon, speed trips. Trips, 3 wide receivers, tight end is the back guy.
I've always called it Y-ISO, but I
like
just
that
refer to what other people call it, and then I try to parrot them, because that's how you
well,
do
if you're ever
business.
If you're ever near within earshot of John DeFilippo, you be sure to call it 1-by-3.
I will. I'll shout it intermittently just in case he's around and I don't see him.
Yep. He's been using Rudolph in those 1-by-3s too. That's what's interesting, because Rudolph is not Zach Ertz, the guy that DeFilippo watched in Philly last year.
Yep.
He's not that kind of athlete, but it's just something to keep in mind, that the tight end can be a real weapon in DeFilippo's scheme. Plus, he's got 2 outstanding wide receivers.
Two more notes from this game. Roughing the passer calls. I mean, that was a big storyline in week one. Less of a storyline across the league in week two, but in this game certainly played a big role. Clay Matthews picked up a pretty... It was a tough call. I think it was a tough call. I think Tony Corrente had to keep the flag in his pocket on that one. But it erased an interception that would have given the Packers the win, pretty much. There was also one on Eric Kendricks earlier in the game, which was also, I thought, was more of a 50-50. It looked like a bit of a shoulder drive into the ground type of thing. But yeah, I don't know. Do you have any? Did you get fired up, riled up at all by those calls, Andy?
I don't know. I'm watching this Matthews hit again in slow motion. I can understand from Corrente's angle, I can see why he might have thought there was an excessive field. The problem is Cousins is leaving his feet as he's a deeper throw. And so Cousins is leaving his feet. I would not have flagged this either, but I am fine with the NFL erring on the side of quarterback safety. I think you sometimes live with this.
And last thing, which was actually probably the only thing anyone was talking about going into this game, was Aaron Rodgers health-wise. He moved around a lot better than he did in the second half of that Bears game last Sunday night. Still not what he would usually be moving around like, but I would, you know, if I was going to throw a number out there, which is very scientific and medical, I'd say he was about 80% in this one. I thought most noteworthy. When they were in overtime, they gave a little zone read look, and Rodgers actually, he kept it. And it might have been a nice little gainer, except he, I don't even know how he did it. He somehow sort of stripped himself on the on a little fumble there and actually sort of stalled the drive with that. But he was confident enough to clearly, and it wasn't one of those things where it was a miscommunication with the running back and you know, did he keep it? He clearly pulled the ball down out of the back's belly and was ready to take off with it. So he was feeling pretty good about that knee.
Well, if they could add that dimension to their offense, watch out.
There you go. I think they got to take it easy for a little bit. But, gosh, as of like Friday, I know I thought they might just end up sitting them here. But I don't know. Again, not to put too much stock on September games at this point, but Vikings pretty significant that they get a tie, a non-loss, should we say, at Green Bay in what figures to be the race for the NFC North title here.
I'll tell you why it's real significant, because their second matchup now will be a big-time tiebreaker game. Because the tiebreaker head-to-head, for if let's say they both finish 11-5,
yep,
then the playoffs format, you go, well, who has the head-to-head advantage? Now that they've tied, there's going to be a winner and a loser in that head-to-head. They're not going to have split the series, and we're going to have to go to the fifth or sixth tiebreaker option. So there's a very big Vikings-Packers game potentially on the horizon.
Can't wait until they tie in Minnesota. Before we move on, Andy, you know, only with NFL Game Pass can you replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. There were so many great games this weekend. Like we said, Kirk Cousins with some of those heroic things. Aaron Rodgers was moving better than a lot of folks thought he would. You can watch it, second guess all the Browns decisions, or watch in awe at what Patrick Mahomes is doing. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay all of those games from every angle. There's the broadcast version, commercial-free. There's Coach's Film, which shows the all-22 angle the pros and coaches use, and which we use quite often on the show. And then there's the condensed games that let you watch a game in about 45 minutes. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10things. That's MMQB10things. Game on. And as Andy and I always say, we are very happy NFL Game Pass subscribers around our offices. So get it. Free trial. Can't lose. Andy, let's go Browns, Saints. Everyone's going to talk about Zane Gonzalez in this one, and you know, hey, he missed some kicks. That's how it goes sometimes. Will Lutz missed a kick too. I do want to start. Let's start on the Saints side of the ball. This defense gave up a lot of points to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Gave up a long touchdown, a 47-yard touchdown that tied this game late, and then they gave up, they really played soft on the Browns' final drive that allowed them to move into field goal position one last time. But for Saints fans, are you worried about this defense? Has this defense regressed from last year? Is it too early to say?
Well, I did not like how soft they were in their 8-man coverages down the stretch at times in that game. Those last two plays, that was a concern. The Callaway touchdown is a great throw by Tyrod Taylor, but ultimately the Browns got Callaway screaming to the secondary pretty unimpeded. So it has not been a good defensive look so far. And the other thing is that New Orleans pass rush has been non-existent. I mean, they didn't reach the quarterback today. They didn't reach the quarterback against Tampa. Now, they were faced, the Bucs in that case especially, they're facing a team that puts extra bodies in protection. But as a defense, you've got to make your opponent pay for that. I didn't think the Saints linebackers a week ago were really particularly good on green dog blitzing, which is if your man stays in and blocks to help pass protect, you've got a man-to-man. Don't just stand there. Go blitz the quarterback. Mm-hmm. The Saints were not, you know, I just don't quite know what their identity is from an aggression standpoint right now. It feels like they're still trying their hand at a lot of different things. I think they'll get it figured out still, ultimately, but they need to play better defensively.
And let's talk about the Browns. Look, that Tyrod Taylor throw to Antonio Callaway, I felt like that was the first time they sort of had a Tyrod Taylor play out. Granted, there was weather problems last week, but that's kind of what Tyrod does best, is that, you know, those long throws, those deep balls over the top of the defense, yep, as opposed to, you know, trying to fit in intermediate or deeper throws. He just doesn't really do that, but this was another, despite that throw, this is another shaky performance from him.
they got to make a change because they're not using him a whole lot in their running game. I think they ran read option twice with him, which is fine. Yeah, I'm not saying you need to run a bunch of read option, but they're not doing a lot in the boot action game, so he's not even threatening the backside of the defense to help their running game. They're not really featuring his mobility. Well, if you're not featuring his mobility, what's he doing out there? Because we've been over this a bunch. He's not an anticipation passer. He's a see-it-and-throw-it passer. The problem is the Browns this year with Jarvis Landry, just like we suspected they might, Gary, they become a lot more schematically advanced. They're not just a spread out ISO route Browns that threw 22 interceptions with a rookie quarterback last year. They're scheming. They're using formations. They've done a very good job with bunches lately, getting receivers matchups, getting guys crossing the field. And Taylor's hit some of those. He's not a bad thrower on crossers. But overall, when you're playing a highly schemed offense, you have to have a quarterback that's going to anticipate those schemes working. He's got to know how the plays work and be willing to trust that and throw the ball before they fully work. That's anticipation passing. And if he doesn't do that, then you might as well go run the isolation routes, because at least then he's got more options theoretically when he's running around looking for where to throw the ball. So I don't think Taylor's a schematic fit for the Browns is the bottom line. And Baker Mayfield, from everything we've heard, stylistically, he would be. So I don't understand why Baker Mayfield is not starting unless he just absolutely looks lost in the meetings during the week. But from what we know of him, I would find that hard to believe.
Yeah, again, look, Robert Klemko did that whole series all draft season, and all we heard, and this was not just the Browns, this was across the league. I mean, Baker Mayfield was blowing people away with his acumen, with his work in the on the chalkboard, or whatever they use now, the grease board. He seemed to be very much NFL ready. I do want to back you up real quick because I thought you broke this down really well. Tyrod did throw, he had a costly interception last week. He had another one this week. His thing is protecting the ball. This interception this week was unusual because it really did. It started with a very nicely done sort of un-Tyrod type of movement within the pocket, and it just ended really poorly.
Oh, so have you read? Did you already edit my article then? Taylor article.
I edited your article, but it was a point that was made repeatedly on the broadcast, and it really was when that play played out, it was like, oh, he never does that, and then he ended in an interception. Well, it was a bummer.
And for our listeners, well, I guess we'll do them the courtesy of telling them what you and I are talking about here. Is there was Kurt Coleman, who blitzed off the edge, which is something he actually does pretty well. He's a former Panthers safety. He's now with the Saints. He got in clean or got in very quickly, and Taylor had to move within the pocket, which is not Taylor's strength. He's not a subtle, nuanced pocket mover. On this play, he was, but the problem was in the process of it, he stared down David Njoku's skinny post or in-breaking route, and he led free safety Marcus Williams right to the ball. And I thought that play was really indicative of the subtleties of not being a natural pocket passer. Because if that were Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Phillip Rivers, if that were a true, let's call it even a limited pocket passer for some of those guys where you have to play within the pocket, they're moving within the pocket to avoid Kurt Coleman, and they're not leading the safety with their eyes still. They're still scanning the field, manipulating the safety on their terms, just like they would if they weren't moving within the pocket. Their pocket movement becomes seamless and natural. For Taylor, because it's not seamless and natural, he moved, and yes, he moved very well, but he sacrificed some of his downfield vision in the process because it's just not a natural thing to him. He's used to tucking and running the ball. And I thought it's just one more illustration. Mayfield, if he's to have a nice career, he'll have to move with subtlety and nuance in the pocket. I would imagine that's something he'll be pretty good at because he has no choice but to be good at it. It's just the little things. Taylor's not the right fit for a traditional pocket passing scheme, and that's what the Browns are trying to run.
As far as making a change, I don't think it's an option to do it this week. They got a short week. They're Thursday night.
Tough.
They play the Jets. Yeah, I mean, short week and the Todd Bowles defense. I think that's a that's rough. But it gets interesting if they win Thursday night. And it's, look, it's at home against a Jets team that just got beat up a little bit, playing a rookie quarterback. Home teams tend to have a little bit of an extra edge on Thursday night anyway. Then it gets interesting. I mean, if you lose and you have 10 days, maybe you make the switch. But if you're coming off a win, do you sort of play to the public and say, we're riding with this guy?
I don't know. Deshaun Watson went into Cincinnati on a Thursday game last year and pulled one out. He did not look great doing it,
yeah,
though. He was mobile and he could run around and make something out of nothing. That's not really what you're expecting with Mayfield.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe this isn't the week to play him. But if the Browns did theoretically put in Mayfield, I wouldn't throw a fit over that.
He had Watson had played the second half of the opener, and that's
right.
That Texans meltdown against Jacksonville there. But I think things get interesting if they win Thursday night. I think if they lose, I think they absolutely have to make the move, unless, again, if something's going horribly wrong with Baker Mayfield behind the scenes, we don't see what's going on day to day. But like you said, I mean, we did so much reporting on Baker Mayfield leading up to the draft, and so many teams loved him because of the football IQ and the processing speed and the storage room in his brain for all this stuff. It would just be shocking if that was the case. But let's go Cowboys Giants. The Sunday nighter. This was, you know, most people play fantasy football, and you were probably all psyched to see a little bit of a shootout, a little bit of Odell Beckham Jr. and Saquon Barkley, and it didn't really pan out. Cowboys threw a lot of slot blitzes at the Giants, really seemed to catch the Giants off guard, which I guess, look, I never think of the Cowboys as a team that use a lot of slot blitzes.
Because they're not. That's not their identity. It's interesting because in training camp, I had a conversation with Eli Manning about some of the Cowboys' blitz packages, and he had a really good beat on some of their blitzes last year. And Dallas was bringing linebacker blitzes on the plays we were talking about, and it was a nice conversation. He was open, but he wasn't all the way open because he knows he has to play Dallas again. So he told me he wasn't saying everything here. I'd like to have a conversation. You know what he needs to do, Gary? The conversation he had with me, he needs to have it with his offensive line, because those guys really struggled to identify what Dallas is doing. What the Cowboys do, they really stress an offensive line. So if you don't have chemistry up front, Dallas is not who you want to face, because they do so many gap exchanges, not just in their blitzes, but also in their run defense concepts. But let's talk about tonight. It was in their blitzes, in a gap exchange, just think stunts and twists, guys crossing and shooting in the different gaps. They make you pass off assignments, and they make you identify assignments on the fly and different assignments. It can be a hard thing to deal with, and you're not used to Dallas adding a fifth rusher to that equation. That was the game. They blitzed a bunch. The Giants didn't have an answer, and Dallas won. If the Giants had had an answer, the Giants would have won this game, because we saw what happened when Dallas stopped blitzing, when they were in lead protection mode late and the Giants started marching up and down the field.
Yep. No, that was a nice job by Rod Marinelli, because, you know, we talk about these division rivalry games, and you know, Lord knows Eli Manning against the Cowboys has been happening for like 40 years now. So to be able to catch the Giants off guard in this one was impressive, and obviously the Giants still have a little bit of work to do here. It's the lack of explosive plays is a little bit frustrating. I mean, you know, their touchdowns are the garbage time thing to Evan Engram, and then in week one Saquon had the one long run there. But it's been
2 weeks, and their O-line has short-circuited their offense. That's what it is through these first 2 weeks. The offense looks well-designed. Barkley, you can see the talent. You can see that it exists. We're not really seeing it in its full entirety yet. That offensive line's an issue, and we thought it might be too. Nate Solder was not going to fix all five positions.
Yeah, that was, you know, Dave Gettleman said his first order of business was getting that line going there, and it just hasn't played out in the first 2 weeks here. Cowboys on their side of the ball, Dak kind of it looked like they saw what Cam Newton did last week, and they kind of said, let's do some of that stuff. Dak on a couple of those zone read keepers really burned the Giants, and I mean, that long touchdown to Davon Austin, that just sort of held up as the game winning play for the most part.
Prescott threw the ball a lot better in this game. I'm still withholding judgment on Dallas's offense. I think that you need to – I know Prescott played in a spread system in college, and that's what he's comfortable with. I think as a pro quarterback, you need to have him in a more traditional rollout type of scheme where he's a facilitator. He's a Rajon Rondo type of QB out there. They haven't gotten to that fully yet. We saw some elements of it tonight. But in the meantime, Prescott at least threw the ball a lot better. He was not good in week one throwing the ball. I went back and watched that film even closer on Saturday. He was horrible throwing the ball in week one. I thought he was very good at times throwing the ball tonight.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Cowboys kind of played this game on their terms, thanks to that big play early on to Tavon Austin, 64-yard touchdown pass there. Dak threw for 160 yards in this game, and it really never seemed like they needed him to do a whole lot more. He converted a couple of third downs on that long drive that kind of sealed it. But you know, you take away that big play, that's less than 100 yards passing in the game, and that was more than enough in this one, and they get through yet another week where they don't have Travis Frederick and probably feeling pretty good about that. Let's go Broncos, Raiders. Andy, tell me about Case Keenum in this one, because it's ugly.
It's ugly, but hot at the same time. I want to say something terrible, so we'll leave that to the Barstool guys to figure out. But it's and that's how it was last week too. Case Keenum has been a QB of extremes, and that's what Denver knew they were getting, I'm sure. That's why Minnesota decided to get Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. What was said to me from Minnesota was just you know a little bit more what you're getting with Cousins.
Yeah.
Keenum's it's not a double-edged sword. He's played well enough over the last year and change to be given more respect than that. But I don't think he's been seeing the field entirely well these first few weeks. And when you do that and you're an aggressive downfield, deep intermediate thrower, you're going to get some turnovers or you're going to get some missed opportunities and you're going to get some ups and downs. And we've seen that. But you know what, Gary? Having said that, the Broncos are 2-0 from this, and their defense looks like the defense we saw a few years ago.
Yeah,
They've got the talent to look like that. I was going to say, because the Raiders actually played very well against them today. But Von Miller and Bradley Chubb look excellent. The corners are man-to-man guys when Roby's in there with Harris. We'll see what they do at nickel. I guess what I'm saying is, in the big picture, there's reason for optimism with them. Today, though, Oakland outplayed them at times. I'll give them that. But again, they're 2-0, and I think their defense is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I thought Oakland played pretty well offensively, especially compared to what we saw in the opener for them. And they just look, they couldn't put enough points on the board here. You know, they were stuck on 12 and then stuck on 19 for the rest of the game. So even though, you know, you kind of say like, oh, Raiders kind of got the best of them a couple of times. 19 points doesn't win a lot of NFL games at this point.
And that was with Derek Carr. At one point, I think he was 24 out of 26 passing, and a lot of those were to wide receivers. They got the ball to Amari Cooper. Much better job. Cooper played with more confidence this week. Martavis Bryant was out there. I don't think he knew any of the plays. They only threw wide receiver screens to him.
Yeah.
But they had him on. You know, he's here in uniform.
Patterson type of package for him.
Yeah, well, at least Patterson goes in jet motion and moves around. I mean, Bryant just stood out there and caught what they threw him. But maybe he'll learn something as he goes along. I don't know. But it was a better, much better-looking Raiders offense. But you're right, it did not yield a lot of points. And that has to be a little unsettling. The other thing that I've forgotten how much I enjoyed until I've seen it now again is all the John Gruden faces you get when things go poorly for the Raiders. I almost root against the Raiders just because I like to see John Gruden's facial response.
It is kind of good to have him back. Raiders games are a lot more interesting. All right, handful of games left to go here. But, you know, first, you know what's not smart? Leaning on your young kicker to win a game. Also, you know those job sites that send you tons of the wrong resumes to sort through? That's not smart either. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/things to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So, Patrick Mahomes has done it again. We talked about it on the Deep Dive show last Thursday. We kind of wondered Joe Hayden was not going to be in the lineup. Artie Burns was actually banged up, too. He did start and he did play. But, you know, would the Steelers have to sort of play it a little more conservatively? They did. And, I mean, Mahomes... 23 for 28, 326, 6 touchdowns, and he was as good as that stat line would suggest.
That Joe Hayden injury is a big deal. If that's what made Pittsburgh not be scared, and I'm eager to watch the film on this one. This is one you need the all 22 because we need to see how Mahomes is reading the safeties and what they were making him read. If Pittsburgh was very simple and straightforward, which my sense was they were, but I don't want to go that far yet. You might have a better sense for that, Gary. That Joe Hayden injury was a big deal then. They need a corner out there if they're going to disguise and be aggressive.
Yeah, this one overall had a bit of a Big 12 football feel to it, 42-37 final. It was Chiefs were up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, and that was 21-21 at halftime, and both teams just sort of went up and down the field here. As good as Mahomes has been, plenty of concern about this Chiefs defense at this point, although still no Eric Berry, so maybe they get Berry back, and that provides a little bit of stability. But it looks like right now they're going to win a lot of games in this fashion.
Yeah, it's going to have to be shootouts. They've got questions at the cornerback position, and they're a matchup zone defense, which means a lot of their coverages play out like man-to-man. You have to have corners to do that.
Yeah. Yep. Ryan Fitzpatrick does it again. I can't believe we're this deep into the show and we're talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick shredding the Eagles, the defending champs, in their building there. The Bucks are 2-0. Fitzpatrick fantastic again, at his most dangerous, in the shadow of his own goalposts here. Had 2 75-yard touchdown passes in the first 20 minutes of this one, including on the first play of the game, got DeSean Jackson. If you were disappointed that DeSean Jackson didn't get it going last year, he's getting it going this year with Fitzpatrick under center. O.J. Howard had a long catch and run touchdown. And I guess 2 points. We talked about this a little bit last week. Fitzpatrick has been fantastic over 2 weeks. Jameis Winston comes back week 4. We have one more week to go. Perhaps Fitzpatrick falls on his face as he has sometimes in the past. But if he gives you even like a B performance when they play the Steelers next Monday night, do you just keep him in there?
So this far into the Bucs intro and no acknowledgement of your Buccaneers prediction, your totally disrespectful, dismissive take on the Buccaneers and how they were guaranteed to start 0-3, and it's just a laughing stock of an organization.
I knew you were going to do that.
The ship's going down. You even had a metaphor for it.
I knew you were
going to
do that. I want to make 2 points. Number one, I said the Dolphins are going to the playoffs, so I'm just going to ride that for a while. But number two,
irrelevant.
Whatever I say about the Bucs, the opposite happens. You told me to bet them to win the Super Bowl a couple years ago when they ended up with the worst record in football.
I did not tell you that. You and Matt Gagné made that assumption on your own.
I read between the lines the messaging you were sending me, Andy, and that was to bet a large amount of money on the 100-1 Bucks to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you and Matt did, which you're probably not supposed to do as editors, by the way. Do they teach you at the time it was Time Inc., when you got your Time Inc. employment package, what did it say about taking the predictions of one of the staff writers and using that to wager your money, big money, it was big money you bet, on those predictions, and then using that against the staff writer if the prediction doesn't come true?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's in the employee handbook. It's very much encouraged.
Okay, well, as long as it's encouraged. Fitzpatrick's playing with great decisiveness. Definition two, I don't know. But decisiveness, he's always been that kind of QB, and that's been his strength and his weakness. Right now, in the nature of the Bucs offense, it's a downfield passing offense. It's certainly becoming a strength. And I you know, I'm not surprised they did what they did today, Gary, for the simple reason that Philadelphia's corners and safeties are uniquely aggressive at a lot of the Eagles' base coverages. Yeah. Their safeties play shallow, especially Rodney McLeod. They're very aggressive there. They got over the top, the Bucs did, against them a few times. The corners, we've seen the issues that Jalen Mills has had with double moves. It's an aggressive secondary, and if you fight fire with fire and you get that Eagles D-line blocked up, the secondary plays that way because they have a defensive line in front of them that's often getting the ball out quickly, so that's why you'd be more aggressive in the secondary. Well, if you're going max protection and your O-line's holding up, and that Buccaneers O-line is better than people realize, it's not great, but it does not have a weakness, aggressive defensive backs can get torched.
The other side of this, and by the way, Fitzpatrick is now 4-1 as the Bucs starter here. You go back to last year. I mean, the guys yeah, play really well in this system, and perhaps having that that off season to basically prep as the early season starter, sort of pushing through the next level. We're not saying Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to throw for whatever he's on pace for, 6,500 yards and it would be 64 TDs or something like that, but. There's going to be ups and downs, but this is very ups right now.
And also, do you know DeSean Jackson has now set the record for most 60-yard touchdowns in NFL history?
Yeah? Nice. That's good. He should own that record.
Yeah, it makes sense. Who would you guess he's tied with?
Joey Galloway.
Joey Galloway. Try again.
Oh, that was a good guess, though, right?
It was, but it's not going to sound like a good guess when you hear the actual answer.
Oh, is it like Jerry Rice or Randy Moss?
It is. It's Jerry Rice.
Yeah, that's not that fun. He owns every record.
But I wouldn't have guessed that Rice would have had the most 60-yard touchdowns. I don't remember him as that kind of player. Like Jackson, Jackson has gotten there in how many games? 142 career games.
Yeah.
Looking up Jerry Rice's games now, and that's probably a part of it. But Rice, to me, was not. He's not like explosive like Jackson or Moss.
Well, I mean, he was, you know, he was all that catch and run stuff, and plus they scored a million points.
Rice, 303 games. So Jackson got to 23 60-yard touchdowns in 142 games. Jerry Rice did it in 303 games. Can't tell me Jackson shouldn't go to Canton first ballot, Gary.
Is he? That's a debate for next week's show, or whenever he gets his next 60-plus yard touchdown. Is DeSean Jackson better than Jerry Rice? But no, that's good for him. He's had a neat career, and he's obviously been a big play threat. And they were missing that last year, and now it seems like they've found it again. I do just want to I want to talk to you really quick. This might have been Nick Foles' last start for the Eagles, possibly ever. Carson Wentz, there are reports that he'll be ready to play in week 3, trusting that Wentz stays healthy, which we hope he does. That might be it for Foles. Open market next year. They have a mutual option, Foles and the Eagles, for $20 million. I can't imagine them keeping him on the books on that contract. Is he a starter next year? Is he, you know, is he Case Keenum? Is he someone someone's going to bring in and say, we're going to give him a shot to become the guy?
I don't think we'll see that happen. There's Will Cain and I did that project a few weeks ago about the number of teams that feel like they should feel like they're set at QB. And entering this offseason, which is a ways off, of course, and a lot could happen, but Will and I thought there were about 28 teams that are set at quarterback already for 2019. And so that's a small market. That's a lot less than this year where we saw Case Keenum get a contract. Mm-hmm. So I bet my guess now, and again, a lot will happen between now and then, and it's a good offseason discussion, but my guess is Nick Foles will be viewed as a really high-quality backup.
All right, let's go Falcons-Panthers. This is another big division battle here. Falcons get it. Falcons were in the red zone four times. They scored four touchdowns. That's basically that's how they put up 31 points. This was a 31-24 victory. They did it with that Devontae Freeman. Matt Ryan ended up having two touchdown runs. He had a sort of a long scramble for the second one and sort of dove into the end zone, which I don't know how excited I am about Matt Ryan putting himself in harm's way, but he did it. They got points and they got the win here with a very short-handed defense at this point.
And speaking of a quarterback in harm's way, and great for the Falcons to have red zone offense going. That'll quiet their talk radio stations there in town for this week. But quarterback in harm's way, the Cam Newton hit that DeMonte Kazee laid out, absolutely deserved ejection. Do you think it deserves a suspension?
I think it deserves suspension.
I do too. The more, and you know what? I bet you Dan Quinn does, because the Falcons take a lot of pride. Rich McKay, their president or whatever his title is, he's a very powerful man in their front office. Mm-hmm. He is big on the safety and long-term health of football and football players. And that whole organization takes tremendous pride in tackling the right way and taking the head out of the game. It's a really big deal to those guys. And to see one of their players so violently and blatantly violate that, I'm sure is upsetting to them. I bet you they wouldn't put up much of a fight if the NFL wanted to suspend Kazee for the hit too. What point in the game was he ejected? I forget.
Oh, that was I think I was late in the first half.
I'd suspend him then. I mean, that's so if he'd been ejected in the very first quarter, maybe the league would say, well, that's kind of the suspension. He was out the whole game. But I think a game and a half, that seems fair to me.
No, sorry, that was early in the second quarter. I remembered it was on one of the Panthers' touchdown drives. I couldn't remember which one.
Yeah.
I will say the thing, and I say all the time when people say, oh, the game moves so fast. The game moves fast. These guys know how to move fast. This isn't, it moves fast, but these guys are trained to react fast and control their body in that way. I will say in Casey's defense, he's like 185 pounds. Cam is 245. This wasn't the usual, sort of the defensive player taking out the sort of the helpless quarterback. Cam should not be officiated differently, but I understand KZ sort of being ready to go a little more aggressively as Cam Newton was approaching him and obviously getting carried away on this. I see, he didn't come into the league with like a reputation being a dirty guy at San Diego State or anything like that. Obviously there's not a huge sample size in Atlanta, but I mean, if he's out now the Falcons are digging here for bodies on the defensive side of the ball. The only thing I'll say about this game, I thought the Panthers let him off the hook a little bit in the run game. I thought we'd see a little more, whether it's McCaffrey or even C.J. Anderson. C.J. Anderson had a long run early. I just thought you'd see him try and pound it a little bit more north-south against the Falcons. They end up, Cam probably dropped back 50 times, and they ended up probably calling 15 or 16 runs. They had 18 on the game. A couple of those were Cam scrambles, but
they're going to be a run first offense. You're right about that. That has to be their identity. And they, at least on the positive side, the runs they have shown have been similar to what they've done over the years. Norv Turner has continued what predecessor offensive coordinator David Shula did so well, and that is having a multiple deceptive Cam Newton centric running game.
Yeah, well, let's see what they have going forward here. That NFC South is suddenly looking really interesting. Lightning-ish round. Let's put the ish after the lightning. Let's run down the rest of the games here. Titans beat the Texans. Texans still looking pretty disjointed on offense here, which I guess not a huge surprise. It's been 8 career starts for Watson, missed all that time with the torn ACL. The Titans were without Mariota. They got very creative. They end up scoring on a long fake touchdown. Fake punt touchdown. Kevin Byard throws to the rookie 66 yards. Who was it? Chris Chinnick. out of Arizona. And, yeah, Titans end up sort of outlasting the Texans in this one in some bad weather in Tennessee.
Yeah, last week the issue for the Texans, they just didn't have anybody at wide receiver, and so their offense did not function. This week, Will Fuller was back, had 113 yards receiving, 39-yard touchdown included. DeAndre Hopkins did his thing, six catches, 110. Still wasn't enough. That's a little bit unsettling now. They got to get going there in Houston.
And by the way, it's Dane Cruikshank. As we once again, or I should say I once again butcher someone's name. I've only seen it spelled, and I know who he is, and I knew him at Arizona. I'd never heard it pronounced, so I just looked it up. Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, as I said in the preseason, they are on fire here. They shut down Sam Darnold, derailing Sam Darnold's Hall of Fame trajectory here. This was a nice win for the Dolphins. They made some pretty sloppy mistakes too in the second half, but they were in control of this one for the most part.
Dolphins have a good set of safeties. I like T.J. McDonald, a long, stalking body, a guy that can play up near the box, down near the box, or back in middle field. Rashad Jones is excellent as a free defender, and then Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's kind of been their slot guy so far. I know there were people in the organization that thought the plan was let's have him be our center field traffic director, but he gives them a third option. So they've got some guys to use here and a lot of versatility, and I think they're going to get better as the season goes on defensively.
Andrew Luck gets his first win since back in the 2016 season. They go to Washington and get this one. This was we've talked about the Redskins. It's sort of a game flow dependent team. They fell behind in this one, and they just didn't have what they had to have to get back. And not to mention the Colts really took the Redskins' rushing attack out of this one.
Two things from our guy Reed Foster on this. For one, Indianapolis' third down conversion rate right now is like 61%, which is the best in the league. Last year was the Falcons at 44.7%, to give you some context. Mm-hmm. And then Andrew Luck, his average pass is traveling through the air now at 4.6 yards. That was what this week was. Last week, I think it was around 6 yards. It's a dink and dunk approach. I think that's what they need to do to keep Luck safe. They're not going to be only that, but that has to become the foundation. And it looks like Luck's responding pretty well. They're instilling discipline upon him with the scheme.
Yeah, it was it looked like a little bit of inclement weather there too, sort of playing into that game. But out in San Francisco, the Lions got better. And look, the Lions in whatever you want to say about Matt Patricia, Lions played in this one. They played hard. They were still too mistake prone and came up empty. Matthew Stafford was just a little bit off on a couple of deep throws that would have been big plays. They hung in there, but the 49ers get the win in this one. I don't know. Both these teams look like they are sort of working some things out at this point.
I'm going to watch a film on this early in the week, and maybe we'll do – I know the Lions have the Patriots coming up, don't they? They play the Patriots on Sunday night? Maybe
they
that's
do.
One we do in our Thursday show, and I'll watch the
is.
Lions. Yeah, I'll look at that Lions-Niners film early in the week thing, because I'm eager to see what's going on with Detroit.
They, I will say the one play I want to mention, this is Jimmy Garoppolo threw a brutal interception when the 49ers were protecting a 3-point lead late, and he got bailed out by a holding call, a good call. It was a hold, but it was away from the ball. It was not an area he was looking at. He just sort of drifted back and tried to throw a little ball into the flat that was easily intercepted, and he had to make what looked like at the time a temporarily game-saving tackle. But Lions were going to have first and goal down three with less than 2 minutes to go. That was interesting. The gods are smiling on Jimmy Garoppolo, as they always do. Let's go to Buffalo. Chargers hammer the Bills. Not terribly surprising. Josh Allen was fine. Considering the supporting cast, he held up fine. Probably the most interesting thing from this game was Vontae Davis retired at halftime, which just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. I've watched. Did you ever see the movie? Boy, what was it? It was a movie with Christopher Walken and Philip Seymour Hoffman in it. They were in an orchestra, a quartet. It was a very good movie. I'm sure someone will tweet us with the name of it. But anyway, one of the guys in the quartet, he retired in the middle of the performance, which I guess is something you do on stage, and that kind of, like, that's an orchestra thing. That's not a football thing, though. That's I don't know if he was thinking it's a dramatic walk-off for Vontae Davis, but this is probably what people will remember him for now, and it's going to overshadow what otherwise was a stellar, sometimes underachieving, but overall pretty nice career.
He did have a good career, and he released a statement afterwards kind of saying he meant no disrespect. I know a lot of the Bills teammates were upset by that. Lorenzo Alexander talked about it a little bit afterwards, but it was strange. I mean, look, you go through a week of practice, you suit up on game day. I think you've made a commitment to finish the game if you're healthy. I think that's fair to say. We'll try not to hold it against them, but that's a little bit absurd. Especially, I don't know what he thought was going to happen in this game. Like, I don't know if he thought the Bills were going to go out there and just hammer the Chargers. That did not happen. What did happen, though, is the Rams went out and hammered the Cardinals, which was not surprising at all.
No, not at all. In fact, we can use this little spot, Rams-Cardinals, to analyze what I said about that movie. It's a late quartet. That's the name of the movie.
Oh, okay.
A late quartet.
I was going to say, Shelby Royston just texted me, our producer, saying that's the first time you referenced something pop culture that I had no idea what you were talking about.
And I can't tell if that's a compliment or an insult to me, but
I don't know either.
Rams shutting out the Cardinals, not a surprise at all. The Rams, they always seem to fulfill expectations. I can't remember when the Rams came out and played below their ability.
Yeah, that's a good point, because even the playoff loss last year to the Falcons, it was kind of like a couple of special teams fumbles. It kind of got sloppy, but
yeah, that was the only example I can think of, which is the worst example to have in the playoffs. But the Rams always, they come out and take care of their business. They did a nice job there.
Yeah,
obviously 34-0 or whatever it was. Obviously,
one more thing that was the 14 games that we just covered there. Josh Gordon, he is going to be released, or if they can trade him, the Browns will trade him. He is done there. You saw Antonio Callaway do some pretty nice things. Antonio Callaway, very talented, has sort of his own issues off the field historically, but I mean, what do you do with Josh Gordon at this point? He's got to get his life straightened out. It just seems it's so difficult to bring him in and say, well, here's someone we can rely on.
Oh no, you can't say that. But you, and I don't know what he's got going on. A lot of times when usually in these kind of deals, it's not as simple as, oh, he's missing his marijuana tests or he's failing for, you know, they're more complex and difficult than that. I don't know if that's true here, but that's usually how it is actually going behind the scenes. So I don't know what you have with Josh Gordon. I would make a run at him if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, though. If I'm going to play the way I've been playing, Gordon's from Texas, for what that's worth. He's from Houston, but I think I'd throw caution to the wind and make a run at him, but we're totally guessing, Gary, because we don't know what's really going on with him.
Yeah, I tell everyone, Ben Baskin did a really good profile on Josh Gordon last year. Go read that, and you can sort of you can read between the lines on sort of the situation he's in. The only thing I thought of, and when the Vikings drafted Dalvin Cook, a lot of people were staying away from Dalvin Cook. One of the reasons the Vikings liked the idea of bringing Dalvin Cook up there is because they were sort of getting him away from what he was near in Miami and some of the people who were really influencing him in a negative way. I know Texas isn't a big state, but I would be kind of fearful to have Josh Gordon down there for his personal health. But he's got some things to sort out, and he's still young. He's 27. Let's hope he gets there. But I don't know if that's ever gonna happen. Let's wrap it up, Andy. The thing of the week. Would you like to go?
I will go. I'm going to say New England's road uniforms. I love the road uniforms. I love the color distribution, and I love them more when you put them next to Jacksonville's home uniforms, which really, this is my point. Those new Jaguar uniforms look like freaking practice jerseys. There's no stripes, there's no outline or anything. I hate the new Jaguars. It looks like it's wrong. It looks like it's a training camp game.
No, I like the simplicity of the you know, it's a game. I mean, you already have the game atmosphere. I like their uniforms. And look, they fixed the helmets. That's even better. So
I like the helmet fix, but we will never, never agree on the uniforms.
Oh, my God. I would totally, if I was designing a uniform, I'd just have one color, and the numbers are a different color, and that's it. No stripes. Well, none of that.
That's how an 8-year-old would design it, and that's probably who designed Jacksonville's. This one and then the last one, too. The Jaguars have been all in on convoluted uniforms, and then they've gone all in on just nothing.
Too far the other way, you think? Oh, I like the minimalist approach to it.
They need to breed this uniform with their last uniform, and then they'll look like an NFL team, whatever that produces.
My thing of the week is going to be, well, he's a man. I'm going to give it to Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator for the Colts. I don't know if we're going to be talking about this in the same way when November, December runs around or comes around. But look, Colts really undermanned on defense, and they've held up fine the first 2 weeks. They put more pressure on Andy Dalton than the Ravens did when they faced that Bengals line on Thursday night. They really shut down the Washington run game on Sunday, and he's doing a nice job with a really undermanned unit. So nice job so far.
I agree. My sense from watching them is they're going to have an overachieving defensive line. And they're going to have issues at linebacker, and maybe that D-line can hide some of those issues at linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah, so far so good there in Indy. That's going to be a wrap for our show. Thanks to today's sponsors, NFL Game Pass and ZipRecruiter. Without them, they wouldn't let us do the show. So please support them the way they support us. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thank you to producer Shelby Royston, as well as all the folks at Cadence 13 who make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best. We will be back Thursday with a deep dive show, and we will have the mini mailbag every week. Send those questions, talkback@themmqb.com, or you can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit. @GGrambling_SI, or we are both on Facebook. Jenny Vrentis and Connor Orr get it going on the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer on Wednesday. And of course, I'll be with Jimmy Traina and Scott Grambling on the MMQB Gambling Show on Friday. Listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. Andy and I will see you guys on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.